Well, I don't know if you can read all of the words on the screen right there, but it says, "This is your life, and do what you love, and do it often, and da 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 da. And if you don't like something, change it. If you don't like your job, just quit and start doing things you love. Start analyzing or stop overanalyzing. Life is simple." It goes on to say, you know, that open your mind, your arms, and your heart to new things. You know, we've seen stuff like this, bumper stickers or T-shirts or, you know, just kind of these great sayings. And it just kind of goes on and on and on about life, about do this for your life and do that for your life and if experience this and stop experiencing that. And if it, and I like these. I think these are great. I think these are great words to live by. And that's exactly what this is, you know, whoever sat down and came up with all of these and compiled them in a list and then, you know, arranged them in this composition here, whoever did that, they did that because they feel like that these are ways to make life better. And these are ways to ensure that the life that you live is the most enjoyable, the most rewarding, the least negative life that you can have. And I don't disagree with any of these. And this is kind of I found this by Googling. I love to Google. If there was a part-time job I could get for just to Google stuff, I'm a professional Googler. Just to see what comes up. And then I love to Google stuff and then click on the images. Now I have filters and all kinds of stuff so that it guards my, you know, precious little eyes. I would say do that because if you Google something and you hit image, you might be scarred. I'm just saying. So put some filters on there, and I got those, and Tim takes good care of me, but I like to Google stuff and then hit image and just see what the internet thinks a picture of that word should be. That's very interesting. So when you Google manifesto and then hit image, this is one of the images, one of the top five images right there. And as we were talking about last week, and as I was going into the real kingdom manifesto about the way things ought to be, see, this here in someone's mind is the way your life ought to be. Oh, come on, you know, your life shouldn't be doing some job you hate. Now, you might disagree with that, and you might have a job you hate. But this manifesto here, this the way it ought to be kind of statement says, oh, don't do a job you hate. Don't be like that. You'll have a miserable life. And they're probably right. See, then God has this manifesto for us, the way things ought to be kind of document, the way things ought to be kind of principle. And he says, you know, and he says a lot of things about life, and it's not the Bible that we read, this kingdom, the way it ought to be type manifesto here isn't put into place so that life will be worse. He gives it to us so that life will be better, so that we can experience something beyond ourselves. And in Matthew 5, 13 through 16, we have a little bit of a glimpse of some more of this manifesto, of some more of this, the way it ought to be. And as Lance read, he said, you know, look, he gives us encouragement. You know, you're the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. And I love those phrases. I love the fact that that Jesus gives us those. I mean, how encouraging. You know, you are precious, is what he's saying. I mean, I could spend all kinds of time going back to the historical significance and the cultural significance of salt, but just understand that, man, it was a big deal. I mean, people that risked their lives in the Roman army as soldiers, they were paid in salt. It's valuable. It was valuable. It was like currency. He says, you are valuable in the world. You are the light of the world. And in a culture that is largely defined by when the sun is up and when the sun is down. I mean, think about the Jewish culture back in those days. And even today, Orthodox Jews, that a lot of their life is determined about when the sun comes up and the sun comes down. You're the light of the world. I mean, how encouraging. He says, man, I want you guys to understand your importance. So, he gives us this, as we are introduced to this other part of this, the way things ought to be document. He says, man, you guys are important. So let's look back real quick at a little review. The first thing that in this manifesto, the first thing in this document or this teaching about how things ought to be, Jesus wants to remind us. God says, look, happiness, the way that you feel, the way that you respond, the way that you act, it's not circumstantial. No matter what is what he wants us to understand. He says, look, you're happy are those who are poor in spirit. Happy are those who are merciful. Happy are those who mourn because they will be comforted, because they will be those who hunger and thirst after righteousness, because they will be filled. What he's saying is that if you're dependent on God, you will be fulfilled in this life. And he goes through all of the lacks, the L-A-C-K-S, the things that we lack. He goes through all of the lackingness. I'm trying to make up words here so you understand where I'm at here in my head. But all of the things that are wrong with us. He goes through them all and he says, you can be happy, but I'm mourning. No, you can be happy if you mourn because you'll be comforted. But I want to be a better person. You can be a better person because God will fill that hunger and that thirst after righteousness. He says, you can be happy. But it's not based on your circumstances. It's not based on what happens. It's based on no matter what, you will depend on God. Then he says that righteousness, it's nothing personal. He goes through and he says that your righteousness is from God. And all throughout this document, he keeps telling us that we have a righteousness from God, that Jesus is my righteousness. So he takes the conditionality out of our happiness, and he takes the me and you out of our righteousness. So we're no longer afraid of God. We're righteous because of him. We're no longer wrong in ourselves. We're right in Christ. So that's where he starts this. That's where he starts this manifesto. And then he goes on to say, but there's more questions that need to be answered. We answered some questions last week about the grace, the fullness of the grace of the kingdom. We answered some questions last week about who is included in this. And it's everyone. Remember, you can't say, I'll hunger and thirst after righteousness, but mercy is just not my thing. And everyone's included in all of these virtues, all of these attitudes that we have. They're all inclusive. But there's more questions that need to be answered. And as our reading this morning, the first question that we have to ask ourselves as we think about the importance of salt and the reality that it is that God has called us, that Jesus says, you're the salt of the earth. The first question we have to ask ourselves in this is, Will you pass the salt? Will you please pass the salt? One of the things that is kind of funny about my house when we have dinner together, and we do that a couple, sometimes, some weeks it's twice a week, some weeks it's once, some weeks it's more than that. It just depends on, who all's got what going on. And so we'll make this meal and all the stuff's there, and we're sitting there and we're eating, and invariably, I need the salt. Now, in our house, the salt is in this little Winnie the Pooh salt shaker. And it's adorable, and it's always at the other end of the table. Always by Vicky's seat. I don't know how that works out, but it's always down there by her. And so I will say to one of my loving children, will you please pass the salt? And they're like, well, sure, Father, we would love to do that. More like, nom, nom, what? Nom, 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 nom. Please pass the salt. Oh, God, where is it? You know what happens to the salt on the way from Vicky's chair to my chair? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, okay. And then give it to that person. Oh, okay. And then makes its way around the table. Everybody's using the salt. Oh, here it is. I'm like, oh, thanks. I'm glad I reminded you that y'all needed salt. But we all, you know, we say that, please pass this on, and we see it getting used all the way to us. Just the importance of this, the enjoyment of this, all of the good things that come out of using the salt and the meals that we have, and all of the things that it's good for. The question that we have to ask ourselves as those who are defined by God as the salt of the earth, will we pass it along to those that we are around? The fact of the matter that God is saying to us is this, is that we have this enormous opportunity. Now, I know the sign to the screen says huge, but if I wrote out enormous, it kicked opportunity down and it just messed up the whole contrast of my slide there. But we have this, you know, it's really enormous. I mean, it's gigantic. We have this opportunity to bring so much more to the table. Did y'all hit table salt? Get it? Yeah, I just don't sit around all day, all week. I do some stuff. We bring so much more to the table. I mean, we have this opportunity to take this life, this meal that God has prepared, not only for us, but for everyone else. And then, you know, what is it like when you have this great meal and it's just, it's just lacking something? Just a little something. You know, if I had a little salt on this, oh, it would just take all the flavors and it would just bring them all together. It would just make everything on my plate so much better. See, isn't that what this manifesto is about? It's about how to take something that's meant for our good and not make it horrible, but make it better. And then I know, but don't let your mind go all the way off. Yeah, but if you dump a whole bunch of salt, that's not what he's talking. Don't allow our humanity to take something that God has said this is what it's for and to excuse away any of our responsibility. Just know that God's got something planned for us if we will pass the salt. And we never should forget our salty origins. He says that, you're the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled by men. Be careful. Because so often we will take that part and say, oh, I better be good. I better be good salt. I don't want to lose my saltiness. So what we do is we start working hard to maintain our salt-likeness. That's not what he's saying at all. He's saying, be careful. You know, how does salt get its saltiness from whoever made it salt in the first place? If you look at Mark 9, 49 through 50, he says, there's a passage where Jesus is talking about going to heaven or not, being in a relationship with God or not. And he says, you know, going to heaven, he says, you know, be careful because you can go, be careful not let your eyes cause you to sin, because you'd rather pluck out your eye. You'd rather go into heaven maimed than go to hell and be, where the fire never dies, where the fire always burns, where the worm never dies. Before that, he uses all of these terms and descriptive words for going to heaven or going to hell, being careful not sinning and not being overtaken by sin so that we miss out on being with God forever. And then right after that, he goes into this, Mark chooses to go into this teaching, and he says, you know, that we will all be salted with fire. He says, be careful not to be overtaken by sin so that you go to this place where there is nothing but fire. And then he says, but we will all be salted with fire. And then he goes on to the teaching, and then Mark teaches us about, if we lose our salt, and you know what he's talking about? We'll all be salted with fire. Well, he's talking about Leviticus 2 and 13, where God says, look, you know, when you have these grain offerings, when you have these flour offerings, when you have these, you know, these sin offerings, he said, always mix a little salt in with it. And see, these offerings are getting burnt up. They're getting consumed. There's all these things that are happening. But Moses says, look, now when you do this, add some salt to it. You know what salt is all about for the Jew in that day? It's all about the presence of the covenant. You see, because salt was this was the preserving agent in the world. There was no MSG at the time. There was no other preservatives, or, you know, there was no vacuum sealing of anything. So salt was used to preserve, and the covenant of God is ours to preserve us in this life and beyond this life. And so the presence of salt in there is a representative of the covenant. And so when we hear about losing our saltiness, it's when our eyes and our minds and our hearts drift away from the covenant that God has made with us. He says, don't lose that saltiness. Don't take your eyes off of the covenant. And see, again, be careful. See, I know I can't lose the covenant because there's things that I need to do to keep the covenant. No. The covenant is that God keeps the covenant. Don't lose sight of that. Don't lose sight of that as His body, as His church, that the covenant is first and foremost from God. And part of our saltiness is understanding that God is the one who secures my future, that God is the one who initiated this relationship, that God is the one who will maintain it beyond my ability to not sin. See, when we don't lose that, when we don't lose the presence of God in our life and the presence of the covenant of God in our life, then we can truly preserve this place, that we can truly help those around us preserve life as well. Salt represents God. And He's calling us to represent Him in this world. So will we please... Well, we pass the salt, and he goes on to say not only about the salt, but then there's this other imagery that he uses. He goes, you're the salt of the earth. But if you lose your saltiness, who can make it salty again? The answer to that is, well, God can. See, if I've lost my saltiness, I just have to turn back to that covenant. God, I've lost my... He can make it salty again. He says, you're the light of the world. The question that we have to answer is, are the lights on? Because people are, in fact, home. You know, one of the things that, you know, you say about people that kind of have no clues. Well, the lights are on, but nobody's home. You ever heard that saying before? You know, it kind of goes along with, well, they're a few nuggets shy of a happy meal. You know what I'm saying? You know, well, I can see that they're blinking their eyes, but I'm not sure that anything is getting in there. But I wonder if God is that, you know, are the lights on? You know, not you know, are we alive? Because yeah, we're living and we're breathing, we're interacting, but do we get it? Do we understand the importance? Not the task. See, we focus on the task involved of being salt or being light. Well, now I've got to preserve everybody. Well, now I've got to show the way. Don't focus on the task of being salt and light. Focus on the importance. The opportunity, the value of salt and light. And the question is, do we get that? Are the lights on? Because people are home. But, you know, after that, I got to ask, you know, do we turn the lights off when we leave the room? You know, that's one of the things as a dad. I feel like that my calling on this earth is simply to follow children around and turn lights off. I just turn lights off. Anybody in here? Nope. Turn it off. Anybody in this room? No, you're not. Nobody's been in here for days. Okay, turn this light off. You know, are there lights at your house that just seem to be left on no matter what? There's a certain room you just see, you know, that for us, it's the downstairs hallway bathroom. Door's closed. Light's coming on. I'm knocking. Nobody in there? Okay, click. I turn 5 minutes later. Click. Who's been in the bathroom? Guess who? No one. Nobody. That's all I do is go around turning lights off. Are we like that in our relationship with God? Are we, I mean, when we leave this room, do we turn the light out? Because, you know, you know why I turn the light off all the time in my house? I mean, it's not about, I mean, it is about saving energy and, you know, I wish it was all about saving the planet, but I really, you know what, God's going to save the planet. Rainforests are up, you know. I wish it were about, you know, and it's about saving money, but just nobody's in there. It just seems like a big waste. You know, nobody's in there. The light, The light's on, but nobody's in there to appreciate it, to need it. Nobody needs it. Do I believe that about the light when I leave here? I mean, do we feel like we are the only ones in Tullahoma that need this? Because when we leave here, do we feel like that, well, okay, now I'm going into this room and I'm leaving this room and I'm going into that room and just turn it off. Nobody cares. Nobody needs it. Nobody wants it. I mean, maybe I need to go around turning lights on. Maybe I need to just go, hey, why isn't the light on in here? Nobody's in there. Well, somebody might be. Somebody might come in here. Somebody might. I need to leave this light on so that man, if somebody, anybody comes, maybe no one's in this room, but the light will bring them in here. Maybe the light will attract them into this room. And nobody's in there, but I leave the light on and they'll see that and they'll say, man, I am tired of being in this dark room. I want to go into that room with all the light in it. Maybe nobody needs light right now, but somebody might. And is it worth it? I mean, you know how much I save on my energy bill by just turning the lights off? Any clue? Yeah, me neither. I really don't. I wonder if it's worth it. I wonder if the savings that I have is worth the aggravation of turning them on and off. I wonder if it's worth what my kids think about me when I just go, turn the lights off in here. Just go, oh my goodness. I wonder if it's worth all of that. Maybe I should just leave them on. You see, the fact of the reality is that nobody can see in the dark. I mean, nobody can. Nobody can see in the dark. In Philippians chapter 2, 12 through 15, it says, guys, there's no plan B for the lights. There's no plan B. You're the light of the world. I tell you what, let's turn over to Philippians. As I stand here before you, and I thought, you know, when I was preparing this, I said, well, just people are familiar with that, but now, and just give them the gist of it. But I want us to read Philippians 2, 12 through 15. Therefore, my dear friends, as you've always obeyed, not only in my presence, but now much more in my absence, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God who works in you to will and to act according to his good purpose. Do everything without complaining or arguing, so that you may become blameless and pure children of God without fault in a crooked and depraved generation in which you shine like stars in the universe. You know, out in outer space, other than stars, I don't know of any other light options. I just got a nod, a shake from Lance. And if anyone would know, Lance would know. I'm going to get Earl back me up. I mean, do you know of any other light source in space besides stars? No. Two of the smartest people I know right there in the same room at the same time. Feel pretty confident about that answer. If there is another light source, it's minuscule. It's relatively unknown to an educated science community. See, there's no other light source. And nobody can see in the dark. And the fact is that if we don't shine this light of Christ, if we don't allow God to work through us, then not only can they not see, but we can't either. See, are the lights on? Because there's so many people home. And it's important. The last thing that I want, the last question or statement really that I want us to talk about is this is one of my favorite t-shirts I've seen. I'm kind of a big deal. I like that. I want to get that t-shirt, just, you know. But how many people do you know like that? I mean, at school, at high school, you know people that are like, you know, they walk down the halls and you can just tell, they're like, I know. I'm awesome. You're welcome. Go ahead and bask. bask in my meanness. You know, the kind of glad you got to see me kind of people, you know. I'm kind of a big deal. You might not have heard of, or you might have. But see, what God tells us in this is, he does tell us that we're a big deal. I mean, we are. We are kind of a big deal. Because we're salt. I mean, that is crucially important. And we are light. And that is, again, equally as monumental of a reality to be. But what he tells us in Matthew chapter 5, if we just keep reading, if we understand if we keep reading, we'll finally get to the purpose of what all of this is. And the reality is, it's not me, it's you. Yeah, I mean, ever been broke up with and someone says, well, it's, you know, they don't want to hurt your feelings, so they say, it's not you, it's me. It's really not you, it's me. I got that a lot, you know, in high school. And they were, you know, it's not you, it's me. But see, what God is trying to say is it's not you, it's me. He's saying, you know, we need to be saying, it's not me, it's him. See, we are important. We are valuable to him. Because after all, isn't this what this purpose is? See, there's a really good reason for all this way it ought to be talk. The way it ought to be is in Matthew 5 and 16 is where he says, let your light shine before men that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven. See, if we love God like we say we love God, then we will understand that God deserves this kind of attention. We'll understand that We want to be who God wants us to be, not because it's hard, not because it's easy, not because it's anything or that or whatever. It's because God, the creator of all that we see and know, the one who envisioned the cosmos and envisioned our lives and all the lives before us and the lives after, and he mapped out our steps and he you know, just he's concerned with every breath and every hair on our head, because that God deserves all of this glory and attention. And he said, look, I've given you this essence about you. I've given you this nature, and it's not your own. Remember, righteousness that comes from Jesus. He says, I've given you this, and now use this to bring glory to me. Didn't I make your life better? Didn't I give purpose to your suffering? Didn't I give you happiness that transcends your circumstances? Now, shine light before men. Be salt in their lives so that people will see me and praise me. It's not about us. It's about him. So we can maintain that saltiness. We can shine those lights bright, knowing that he is not kinda, but he is really a big deal. But we have to believe that. We have to believe that. We have to experience that. We have to, you know, we have to stop holding back as a people and give ourselves fully to God. Stop holding back on experiences and allow God to take us in places that we never thought we would go, that we never wanted to go, because when we get there, we will experience a life far beyond anything else that we could ever imagine on our own. He says there might be pain there, but wow, can you imagine God taking pain and suffering and then turning it around and making it something that we thank him for, that we find joy in, that we find happiness in? See, I can't imagine that, but in his word, he tells me that'll happen if I stop holding back. If I give fully to him, I'll experience more than I ever thought or imagined. So what's it going to be? Is it going to be what it ought to be? Is it going to be what God's calling us to be? Are we going to leave here today making life, just adding that something that brings all of the flavors, taste together, and just makes it all make sense? See, people are experiencing God right now outside of the church, and they just don't know it. See, we come in here and we praise God for this day. Other people just enjoy it. See, what we can do is we can tell them, guess what? You can praise the one responsible for the day that just lights you up. People go hiking. People see this amazing creation and they enjoy it, but we get to praise God for it. See, we can take those experiences. They're already experiencing. You can't help it. He's all over the place. His fingerprints are everywhere. He's left little pieces of himself everywhere, all over this creation. And they're experiencing, but can we bring it all together and give them that one thing that just makes it explode with flavor? Could we give them a light that shows them exactly how to experience him to the fullest? We have some choices to make this week. This morning, if you have any needs whatsoever, any desires to experience God more closely, if there's any way that you can benefit from the ministry here at Highland Hills on a more personal level, just come and let's talk while we stand and while we sing.